Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Fire chaplains provide spiritual and other support for those in the fire service and those affected by emergency crises. These chaplains perform a variety of duties, both on and off the fire scene. Rodney Veldhuizen is a fire chaplain for the Custer Volunteer Fire Department and Dakota Territory Fire Chaplains Association. And he is also joining us from SDPB's Rapid City studio. Welcome, Rodney Veldhuizen. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Tell me a little bit about your journey from all the, you know, a pastor, a faith leader, a spiritual chaplain can and do many different things. How do you end up as a fire chaplain?
Started back in 1984 in a little town of Eddyville, Iowa. Getting the mail one day, and one of the gentlemen come up to me and said, "You ever want to be on the fire department?" I said, "Sure." I said, "Why do you want me?" He said, "Because you're available."
That's a very South Dakota story as well as an Iowa story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Small towns everywhere. So that's how I got started, and as serving a church there and functioned as a firefighter and then as a pastor when the fire was out, I'd take my hat off and say, "How can I help?"
Okay. So the challenges of that are the opportunity is there that you know what you're talking about for sure. You've been right on the line with somebody, but you're also involved in that. How do you keep how do you wear those two different hats when you're impacted by it as well as helping those who have been impacted by it?
How do you wear two hats? That's always the challenge because the fire service is seductive from the standpoint that it's flashing lights and a lot of things going on. You got the command structure where church can sometimes be kind of organized and sedate. And then you mentioned how do we survive being impacted. Well, if you'd ask my wife, she'd tell you I don't do very well with it.
An honest answer from an honest man. Although I don't know, is church leadership organized and sedate? There's probably some pastors listening who chuckled at that.
I'm sure they did.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what fire chaplains do. First of all, what kind of training does it require?
Well, I'm with the Federation of Fire Chaplains, and so I started with a 16-hour class, basic introductions to the essentials of fire chaplaincy. From there, I've gone on and taken further training in what they call pastoral crisis intervention and numerous other issues relating to the psychological well-being. Critical incident stress management is one of the key ingredients to anything a chaplain does, as well as training called individual and peer support, all done by the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation.
Wow. How soon, you know, what do you know from your research, your training, and your experience that says how soon do you have to get to someone after an incident? When are those key times to really provide support?
The window averages between 20 minutes and 2 hours.
Really?
So we need to be on scene with the victims as quickly as possible.
All right. What's the first approach? What's the first thing that you start saying to somebody? How do you get into a conversation about what's happening?
I usually say, "Hi, I'm Chaplain Rod. Is there anything I can do to assist you today?"
And they say, "Nope, I'm good."
They say, "Yep, nope, I'm good." I said, "Well, that's fine. I'll be hanging out here. And if you need me, I'll be around." And usually about 10 minutes later, I wander back over, and then they say, "Well, Chaplain, why are they cutting a hole in my roof?"
Right.
So, well, that's so they can get the smoke out and the heat out and the guys can safely extinguish the fire. Another situation, I had a little girl who had a toy chihuahua who had perished in the fire. And I said to my chief, I said, "Chief, can I ask you the guys to go through and search for this little dog?" "Sure." And she was still distraught. And I, long story short, I sent them back three different times to look for this little doggy.
Yeah. It reminds me of Mr. Rogers, in the documentary recently where he said, look to the helpers. You know, when you see disasters and you don't know what to do and you're overwhelmed by that, look to the helpers. Tell me a little bit about how, you know, it's a simple action of looking for a lost toy, something that has deep meaning. But that could have an impact on that girl her entire life. You must realize that.
I do, because it was a loss. She had lost her pet, and animals are important to folks, and those are sometimes even harder messages to take to people than that they lost a loved one.
Yeah.
Because it was a loved one. The animals are loved ones, and we generally find those pets usually by a door or under the beds. Mm.
Did you find the Chihuahua?
The Chihuahua was actually between the wall and the bathtub. There was a little crack in that space.
And the looking matters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm. All I could say is, you know, sweetheart, we looked 3 times and we can't find her. I'm sorry. And we give her a teddy bear and a big hug. And
yeah. How important is it to tell the truth, you know, in those situations too? Because there must be a temptation to offer hope that you really just don't. I mean, you must struggle. I mean, all of us struggle with what to say when somebody is in distress. But honesty has to be incredibly important in those situations.
You have to be. You have to be honest. I never tell people a lie, but I don't always tell them everything I know.
Yeah.
Because when I get on an accident scene, somebody will come up and, you know, the body's been covered, and they say, "Did somebody die here?" I said, "Boy, I don't know. Nobody's told me yet."
Right.
So I don't offer false hope, but I don't also don't lie to people.
Yeah. Tell me about being of service to the firefighters themselves, the things that they must go through.
That's sometimes the biggest challenge, because firefighters keep the persona that everything's fine.
Yeah.
And when they there's a phrase, I'll keep it PG, but it's fouled up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. So when they tell me they're fine, I just say, well, that means that's your, you know, this is how you're feeling.
Right.
And then they grin, and then they say, okay, chaplain. Then they'll talk to me.
And the long-term, you know, the impact, you know, you get through the moment, and then there's, you know, we're learning so much more about post-traumatic stress and stress injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of your role? Do you sort of hope that they find, you know, the kind of help? You know, what's your role in the long-term is what I'm asking.
In the long-term,
yeah.
I am a licensed therapist, so I can do that counseling, but I prefer to send my guys and gals to someone else. Mainly because I want to stay their chaplain, not know all their secrets.
Right.
But post-traumatic stress is part of it. But there's also something called compassion fatigue, which is the second stage of burnout. And that is after you've seen so many accidents, so many deaths, so much destruction, you get to the point where you just really don't care much anymore.
Mm. Rodney Veldhuizen, we hope to have you back and talk more about this. Let's pick up in the future, hopefully, if you'll join us again.
It'd be my pleasure.
Appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.